Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to the third in our current election campaign series with Roy Williams on the way faith, church, religion have intersected with the life, politics and the policies of our 23 prime ministers. Roy has written a really important book entitled In God They Trust. Then there's a question mark. It's actually quite revealing the way our nation is different because of this faith question. And tonight we've set Roy the challenge of coming up with the top five ways in which our national life has been impacted by Christian faith. It's quite a story in itself. Roy, welcome back.
Great to be here, Lee.
Always great to see you, Roy. Thank you so much again for coming in. Let's do this in an ascending order of importance. So let's start at number five. What's the fifth most significant way that you think Australia has been different and is different because of the faith posture of a prime minister?
Number five on my list is the position of Joe Lyons, our prime minister in the 1930s. Now, this would actually be number one on the list if history had turned out differently in 1939. Joe Lyons, very devout Catholic, the man who went over from the Labor Party to lead the Conservatives in the 1930s, was the closest we've ever had to a pacifist as prime minister. And he resisted all attempts through the 1930s, especially from his own side of politics, to beat the drums of war. He supported all attempts by the British government to negotiate peace with Nazi Germany and with Italy. He used, indeed, his very close ties with the Vatican to negotiate between Hitler, Mussolini and the English. He did that twice. I mean, as you can imagine, this didn't make him popular in many circles, but it's strongly arguable, and historians have proved this with documentary evidence, that Lyon's intervention, his personal intervention with Neville Chamberlain, the English Prime Minister in the 30s, was vital in terms of getting peace in 1938, the Munich Conference. So Lyons really played a role, not just in Australian history, but in world history in that respect. Now, of course, it's a very controversial subject.
Yes.
But in terms of the impact of an individual's faith, unquestionably was there.
And the peace posture of our prime ministers has been quite a significant measure for you in terms of the way faith, church, religion have played out in our prime ministers' lives. And you've got to remember that at this time, the drums of war were beating heavily and loud.
They were.
In the lead-up to World War II.
In the lead-up to World War II. On the other hand, there were nightmarish memories of World War I. And we'll come back to this actually later in a different point. But yes, there are only two valid traditions in Christian theology in relation to war, Lee. One is pacifism, that may sound strict. The other is the just war doctrine, very rigorously applied. And so that was one of my criteria in looking at all of our leaders.
Race is a significant measure you use to assess the performance of many of our 23 prime ministers as well, Roy. That's part of your fourth most significant way in which the faith question has influenced the Australia we know today.
Focusing in particular on one Prime Minister, Alfred Deakin, probably the founding father, Lee. He was Prime Minister three times between 1903 and 1910. A brilliant man, a lawyer, extremely well educated, extremely religiously minded. His private diaries and his very extensive writings about religion prove beyond question that Deakin felt motivated by a sense of religious mission. The setting up of Australia, and remember, there were many people involved, but he was, if there's a single man most responsible for creating Australia in 1901, it was Deakin. And his private diaries show that he wanted to create a Christ-like society. Now, this is all what he wrote.
That's how we started.
It's not what I'm inventing. It's what he wrote. He saw his achievements in that first decade as putting in place the Lord's Prayer on earth. Now, that sounds grandiloquent, but it's a fact. One aspect of that Australian settlement, the most controversial in retrospect by far, was the White Australia policy. It's easy for us to be highly critical of that in retrospect, and looking back now with our sensibility at some of the things that were said at the time, it looks terrible.
It's probably worth for many of our younger listeners to explain what the White Australia policy was.
Sure. Essentially, it was a policy that there would be no, zero immigration into Australia of anyone of a non-white race. It was actually narrower than that at first. It was of non-British stock. The European wave of immigration, of course, didn't happen until after World War II. It was really designed in part to keep out Asiatics. And there were various factors at play. One was a legitimate economic factor, that Australian workers' wages would be threatened by cheap foreign labour. But there was also a broader sort of quasi-spiritual principle, that the British Empire was the epitome of the Christian civilization, and all things British were good and great, and all things non-British were to be suspiciously regarded. The White Australia policy was instituted by Edmund Barton, the first Prime Minister, and reinforced by Deakin and enforced by every Prime Minister, Labour and non-Labour, until Harold Holt in the 1960s. A basic part of our history. But it does have a faith-based origin as well as an economic origin. There was a shocking quote of Barton's, the first Prime Minister, who said that the doctrine of the equality of man was never intended to apply to the Englishman and the Chinaman.
Amazing. To hear with our ears today.
To hear with our ears today.
Yeah.
And of course, it was a distortion. It was always a distortion of the true Christian principle. When you go back 1900 years before that to Paul and his fundamental doctrine, the good news that we're all one in Jesus Christ, that these sorts of barriers were never intended to be erected. And later Christian prime ministers in Australia, much more honourably, took those sort of principles to heart, and our human rights record on issues of race became much, much better. It's still very vexed.
Oh,
yes. Of course, the campaign we're now seeing with the asylum seeker issue,
yeah.
It's still a very vexed issue, and it's a great shame, Lee, in my opinion. And this is all a hangover. Still goes right back to the White Australia policy.
And it's a very healthy reminder to us about the reality that Christian faith is always in the hands of flawed and fallen people. They may be forgiven, but yes. Still fallen. So that's Deakin, White Australia policy. Your third most important category is egalitarianism.
What I'm on about here is, and this is a very fine aspect of Australia, we are an egalitarian country. There is a sense of equality, both actual and perceived, which is very real, and it always has been. Disparities of wealth and income in Australia have never been as pronounced as they are in, say, the United States or Britain. And I argue in the book that one factor, not the only factor, but a very important factor, is that the ALP, the Australian Labor Party, was founded by two broad religious traditions. One, the Protestant Christian Socialist tradition, and represented there by prime ministers such as the early Billy Hughes, Andrew Fisher, and right through to Kevin Rudd, who called himself a Christian Socialist,
yes,
relatively recently. And the second, of course, is the Catholic social justice strain. People like Scullin, Lyons, Chifley, right through to Paul Keating. It's impossible to understand the Australian Labor Party without grasping that those two traditions were absolutely basic in its formation. Our sense of egalitarianism, which means that everyone should be regarded as equal. Not everyone will have the same amount of money, but the differences should be minimised, and culturally, everyone's as good as everyone else. We don't look down our noses at each other on the basis of class, as was and still is the case in Britain, or on the basis of wealth, which was and still is the case in the United States. We're a far more naturally equal society. Some people over the years have questioned that, and of course there are exceptions, but
yes.
By and large, I think it holds true.
It's a very important part of our culture.
Very important part of our culture. Deakin also needs to be mentioned here, because on the conservative side of politics, he made that clear, that that was another aspect of the Australian settlement that he wanted instituted, and of course the Labor Party went along with it. Sir Robert Menzies, in setting up the Liberal Party in the 1940s, emphasised this too, that there's no room in Australia for a party of reaction. It has to be a temperate, moral form of liberalism that recognises the equal worth of every individual soul. And in Australia, we really have put that into practice better than most societies in history.
Our nation is very distinct because of that. Moving on, it's hard to understand in today's Australia, again, the depth of the sectarianism that ripped through both society and politics last century. But you say the way that that was tackled was the second most significant way that faith has played out in politics, right?
Yes, I do. I mean, this is both a good and an awful story. The sectarian ructions, that is, for young listeners, the divide between Protestant Christians and Catholic Christians for at least 70 years in the 20th century, a really awful strain in our society. It was at its absolute worst in World War I, inflamed by Billy Hughes and the plebiscites about conscription for overseas service in World War One, because Catholics were played off against Protestants, a really awful chapter in our history. But then you had great prime ministers like Lyons, firstly, the first Catholic to lead the Conservative parties, Menzies, who was a very ecumenical man who denounced sectarianism, and Menzies, who stepped in and ended the debate, which had gone on for decades, about government funding for religious schools. Now, we take this absolutely for granted.
I was going to say the same thing. Look at with today's eyes, you think, how come?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was an absolute no-no. Protestant Christians, overwhelmingly represented in the Liberal Party and its predecessors, opposed because funding of religious schools would tend to favour Catholic schools because they had less money. So they were against it on those grounds. The ALP hopelessly split between Catholics who favoured it, Catholics who opposed it because they didn't want the government interfering in Catholic schools, and thirdly, irreligious atheists and agnostics who didn't want the government propping up religion. Now, it was Menzies in the 60s who made the first breakthrough, supported by Gough Whitlam. Gough Whitlam fought this battle within the ALP in the 60s, so that by the end of that decade, you had a bipartisan consensus in Australia, which we now take utterly for granted,
yep,
that religious schools deserve and receive generous government funding.
So we can't forget where we came from with that, and the no doubt heroic battles that people like Menzies and Whitlam fought in their own parties to give us the Australia we have in that regard today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So finally, to the number one way in which our nation is different. I've been looking forward to this one. Because of faith, what's your judgment about that? The most important way our nation is different today because of church, religion, faith.
Well, I start from the premise that if you're looking at Australian politics, we've been governed far more often than not by the non-Labor parties.
Yes.
Labor governments are the exception rather than the rule. They tend to come in, try and do big things, and then get kicked out. It may be about to happen again.
Yes.
Now, from the very start, from Federation onwards, the voting base of the Conservative parties is, and until very recent times, has always been the Protestant, sort of hard-working middle class of Australia. We don't have an established church here, of course. The Church of England isn't the Church of Australia. That was another thing that Deakin and others, the Founding Fathers. But it's always been pretty close to it. The Anglican Church, very importantly, the Presbyterian Church as well, and the nonconformist churches, the Methodists, Congregationalists, and so forth, the Baptists. That's the voting block base of the Liberal Party. Menzies knew that when he set it up. And indeed, I recount in the book that the meetings, the various meetings that took place in Canberra and in other places to establish the Liberal Party were held at the Masonic Hall down in Canberra. And the Sabbath was observed. But all that was sort of an incidental recognition that this was, and always had been, where the non-Labor parties got their votes. The Labor Party relied on the Catholic Church. Now, increasingly, that dynamic in politics is weakening. It's fascinating to me that we're probably about to get the first Catholic Liberal Party Prime Minister. That is a real change.
Yes.
And that's a change from 100 years of Australian history. And the Labor Party is led by a man who was raised as a Catholic. This is Kevin Rudd, of course.
Yes.
Raised as a Catholic by his mother, but converted himself to a Protestant form of faith, although he's a bit reluctant to term it that. But I'd say that's the number one.
So how's that shaped the character of Australia? What can we see that's different as a result of all that?
Well, because the Conservative parties have been in office most of the time, we have a country that is really based on Deakin's vision and then followed up by Menzies' vision. So we're a country of free enterprise, but not rampant free enterprise in the way of the United States. We're a country of conservative Christian principles. The Conservative parties have consolidated each time the Labor Party's reforms. So we haven't set class against class. I think better than most countries, our leaders, because the vast majority were Christians, were believers in God. We've managed somehow along the way, with lots of mistakes, to find that sort of middle course. And I think that the fact that the non-Labor Party's support was grounded in the Protestant churches gave it that stability, particularly in the early eras and in the Menzies era, Fraser era, perhaps less so now. And it's interesting just to see how that will play out in the years to come.
And the Protestant work ethic. That's been a very critical part of our nation.
Indeed. I mean, you put it more succinctly than I did, the Protestant work ethic, and John Howard has emphasised this.
Yes.
It's a tricky concept, the Protestant work ethic, but undoubtedly a certain conception of it has underlied our nation. The notion that we are not put here on earth to relax, we are put here on earth to use our talents to the full. Partly that involves financial incentive. Not totally, though. It also involves, as I say, making the best use of our gifts that God has given us for not only our own benefit, but the benefit of society more broadly.
Roy Williams, I thank you so much indeed for putting your mind to these top five ways in which our nation is different and is better in so many ways because of church, religion, faith. Roy Williams is the author of the book In God They Trust. Next week, five of our more recent PMs, Robert Menzies, Gough Whitlam, Bob Hawke, Paul Keating, the man Roy Williams describes as the best post-war Prime Minister, and John Howard. Roy, thanks again so much.
Pleasure, Lee.
See you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.